This hour of Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. It's Mail It In Friday.
I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Yeah, it's Mail It In Friday.
I just stare at my desk, but it looks like I'm working.
So what?
I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
With our favorite side piece today, Scotty Mac.
What's up?
Yeah.
The broadcasting version of a side piece. Once in a while.
A career backup.
No. I wouldn't say that.
It's the more fill about in. Here every now and then.
Yeah, but it's
Here when needed.
Yes.
Every now and then you need to mix it up once in a while. So
there you go. Scotty Mac.
The side piece is in and we're very happy about it.
Pretty excited.
Oh yeah.
Sure. The other guy was just coasting to the finish line yesterday.
Well, see, I was going to say to you guys, the problem here is that this is a one-shot deal. So what is my motivation to even show up and try?
Well, it's Friday, so don't try. Nobody can.
Perfect.
And here's the other thing, too.
You did do one thing wrong. You could have pre-taped something.
I could have.
Like a meaty segment,
Pete Walker,
too.
Like a meaty 30-minute interview.
Well, we do have Pete Walker on at 5 o'clock. That's where you and I can go baby monkey and allow, because you have a relationship with Pete Walker, do you not?
Well,
that's what I was thinking. You could have done a half an hour pre-tape, and then we just roll it in, we mail it in, and put our feet up and do nothing.
And rumor is we're not on TV today.
Yeah.
So maybe we take the Pete Walker interview, and we replay it at 6:30.
See, that's how a side piece becomes a mainstay.
This is how it becomes a relationship.
This is how the affair.
This is how you get busted.
Yeah, this is how you get busted.
You start tossing around ideas like that, you get busted.
You start being around a little more.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's basically the equivalent of leaving underwear in the bedroom.
It is.
That is just a tight tee back left on the floor.
Yeah, not even kicked under the bed or anything. Mm-hmm. That is just right in plain sight when you walk in.
I have to say, in my limited opportunities to be here, I think it's important that I put in a good effort to appeal to those who have bigger say on this program.
Yeah,
I just
lots going on today. We get to order some food, too. I think Tyler was going to do that. We was looking for...
Skip the Dishes, right?
Yeah, he was looking for potential orders. I didn't know what to do.
I wouldn't either. What, like, do we have, like, any option?
Well, Skip the Dishes has, like, so many options. Like I said, just go with mainstream, like, chicken fingers or pizza or something. Like, I'm not going to eat much, but...
It's pretty much they just... You pick your restaurant, they go pick it up, and they bring it to you.
Yeah. So I couldn't... I was brainstorming. I didn't want to be... With the burden of ordering for everyone and then getting out ordered. I don't know. What are you craving?
I think you just go with a Jack Astor's chicken fingers.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what we're looking at. I don't know if... See, Hunt smiling back there. We've made a decision.
Hunt likes that. Well, he's already in long weekend mode.
Well, so is Mullen. I mean, this guy's posting stuff.
He's not here today either?
No, he took he's golfing.
This guy's out that trailer or whatever.
What a loser. I thought he would at least have enough respect to come in today and then go to the cottage.
No, he posted a picture on his Instagram of him like on the course already. And it said spa day.
Spa day for the boys.
Spa day for the boys. Yep. So you know he's already into the whiskey. So Brian is reading a book or a Kindle on his flight to Vegas, and Mullen is probably... half a bottle deep on the course.
Did Hayes ever decide whether he's going to that game tonight or what?
I think
does he even know?
No, I think he didn't want to admit it, but I bet you half of his friends
are pigeons. They don't want to pay.
This is what, and it happens with all group. If you got a group of 8 to 10 guys, you got five guys that do well financially and five guys who are still struggling along. Those five guys will just suck the life right out of it because they're like, I don't want to spend $300 to do that. So you're basically in college mode in a trip like that. Like that drove me nuts. And I understand.
Well, hang on, let me say, you go on a guy's trip with a bunch of heavy hitters and everybody's loaded, so you're doing things a lot different.
But that's not the case.
Yeah, if there's a guy who isn't going to spend and he's making good coin,
but you're
can call him out. If there's a guy making 30 grand.
Yeah, this guy's dinners are $10,000 on his guy's
trip. That's once in a while. My point being is on our guy's trip, there are guys who haven't been as financially blessed. And they understand when they come, they can't. And what happens is we all plan it so that everyone is on the same level. So that you don't, when I plan it right at the starting, the guys who aren't as I guess,
well off,
they get taken care of. They don't have to buck up immediately. Like, it's not, if you want to come on the trip and have fun, you're not feeling financially pressed. But in a situation like the Vegas tickets tonight,
If I was going to Vegas this weekend with my buddies and your hockey fans, I would consider this hockey game almost a must.
I think it is a must.
Like thing of part of the trip. It's like, guys, this is the game four of the conference finals. Let's go.
They're not playing the Florida Panthers
on a Tuesday
night in early December. This is... Yeah.
It's a big game. It's an exciting game. I would find a way to get inside the building. Again, there are guys who are like, I don't want to spend $400 on that particular activity. They want to spend
I was in charge, like, I think you have a bit of a leadership role on your guys' trip.
I do.
I would be like, you know what? Save the felt for another night. Tonight, the $400, because as if you're not going to blow that somewhere else. We're going to the game.
Yeah. I would find a way to plan it in a... You could almost, if there's eight of them, you could grab some tickets in advance and then buy a couple scalped, like get the guys who want to, who may not have as much money to spend, wait until the game starts and then grab something off the scalpers at last minute prices. Because either those scalpers are going to walk away and eat them, they're never ever going to want to eat that. So you could probably get it 5 minutes into the game for face value. That would be my, and again, maybe I'm speaking out of turn because I've never
had to do that. The Game Time app, you can just click on it and say the tickets start going down as soon as they start.
I've never bought that way. I usually get rinsed out off of scalpers. It rattles me because those guys a lot of times are predators. They know how to work the system. But if you have time on your hands and you have cash in your hand, you can get them back.
Isn't it crazy, though, how they appeal to our habits? Like, I've got to be in the door for puck drop. If I miss the first minute or first 2 minutes of the I might miss something, right? And
right.
Like, we have to be in there. And then you got that crazy intro in Vegas, too.
I know.
That was nuts.
It is nuts.
So it's Vegas.
It's great, though. I love it. I love it. I think it's...
If that was my scenario, I would have bought tickets online and probably overspent. And then the guys who didn't want to spend that money be like, okay, you guys grab two at the door, like when the game has started. Come meet us. We'll meet at first period, after the first period, at a bar inside.
Or if two guys want to go to the game. If the other guys don't, we'll meet you after.
Because
the game starts at 5 o'clock.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, the time change. I didn't even think of that.
It's a 5 o'clock
Hey, you want to go? Yeah, I'll go. Okay, you know what? I'll meet you after.
Three-period game.
Bottom
you're
line is friends are losers. He's a loser, too. Loser, loser, and loser.
He's probably listening on his Kindle right now. No. Can you listen on your Kindle?
I don't know. On
he's not listening. He separates when he checks out.
Yeah, he was...
He can cut the cord real good, too.
He took
his
foot off the gas at about 5:30 yesterday and just coasted in.
Did he?
Mailed it in. It was his mail in Friday.
Yeah, he was done. You could tell. And it was a day that didn't have a lot going on as well. So you're just reaching.
Oh,
like, it was a grind. At least now, like, there was the Washington game last night. Like, there's lots going on. There's basketball. The Jays are.
Are they
a mess?
They're there.
Like, they're there, but like...
They got another pitcher on the DL today, Jaime Garcia, and he's been terrible anyway, but he goes down with shoulder inflammation. So that's another body on the disabled list. You know,
it's a battle for them, too. Like, it's just... I feel bad. Right now, the Toronto sports scene isn't as electric as it was, let's say, a month ago.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It's all relative to what you've been through. So it's crazy, the come down. Like, yeah. The Leafs get eliminated. We get the tease. It gets to a seventh game, and then they bomb out in the third period. But you still have the Raptors, and you're thinking, all right, well, had they played Indiana in the second round, maybe they win that series. But who the hell's watching the Raps in Indiana outside of the diehards? The Fringe will check in, but are you actually sitting there from tip to the final buzzer each and every night? Probably not. But when LeBron's involved, you are.
Yeah.
Then they get absolutely washed, and Dubas gets promoted, and Casey gets fired, and it's just bullet after bullet after bullet, and now we're just clunk.
Yeah, that's
the May long weekend is here.
Yeah, and well, there's some teams that need to dig in. I mean, we were talking about it off air, like, you know, I thought the Washington Capitals deserved a better fate last night, but again, it doesn't matter how it happened, how it arrived. The goalie stood on his head. You're at 2-2 going back to Tampa. So if you're a Capitals fan, you're a little concerned because, you know, you had an opportunity. I thought last night could have been the series. You make that 3-1, that's
over.
It's over.
Same thing tonight. Winnipeg loses, over.
I had the hot take, if that's what it was, yesterday on my show, where I said, leading into the Tampa-Washington game, the winner of tonight's game wins the series. Because there is like a checklist of demons that the Capitals have to tick the boxes off of. They did it with Sid and the Penguins.
Yep.
Now there's another one here. You went and you won a couple of games down in Tampa. You had two games worth of home ice advantage, and it doesn't matter if you outplayed Tampa Bay for the majority of last night's game, especially the second half, whatever. You lost the hockey game. Now it's a best of three. You have to win another one down in Florida if you're going to advance, and you have to babysit home ice in game six. They've got to check this demon off. I don't know if they can win the Stanley Cup, but I don't know if that matters. They've got to exorcise this demon in the same way they for did sure. Pittsburgh and Sid.
And it was a prime opportunity. It had Backstrom coming back. They got four power plays in a row. Couldn't find the back of the net. And you could just feel it. Like, I didn't love that Killorn goal against. I thought it was a real nice move by him. But, like, Holtby made a big save on Johnson in tight in the second period on a partial breakaway where Tampa went 21 minutes without a shot on goal. So you got one guy standing on his head, the other guy in a lawn chair. And I thought, okay, Johnson's walking in, scoring here, and this is going to break their back. Holtby makes that save, and I thought, okay, like, giving them a chance because that's tough to do. And then I didn't love the game-winning goal.
I love the play by Sergachev, though.
Oh, it was great. And you know what? Sergachev was, you called me last night. Like, Sergachev was great last night. And Oshie misses that assignment in front. And, yeah, there's a comedy of errors in essence, but you need a big save at that time, and you need somebody to find the back of the net. Ovi did. I thought he played very well last night, but you know, when you look statistically, he didn't find the score sheet. Well, he had the backhand saucer on the Kuznetsov goal. That was ridiculous. But he misses that. I will call it a wide open net. That pass, that short little pass in front, and if you're a Capitals fan, I know you're frustrated because you're saying, okay, kind of seen this before. Like, there's that trust is there. It's almost like the
Leafs, you talk about trust. It's like, if you're a Caps fan, you're thinking, okay, we started trusting you guys this year. You did it in Tampa, and now you did this again to us.
Well, but here you guys can comment on this because you both played, and I could just be reading into this, but it didn't feel like it. When Ovi smashes his stick over the crossbar as the final buzzer goes, my first reaction is, Bud, it's 2-2.
Yeah.
Like, you're still in the series
here. But he knows they pissed away a massive opportunity.
But this is the thing.
It
doesn't matter what the fans think, Noodles. It's what do the players believe?
Well, optically, like, that shows the frustration. We saw it in Game 2 in Tampa, where Kucherov is kicking at Connolly, and Hedman is chasing Oshie around. Like, they were visibly frustrated. Now, two games later, it's Washington that's visibly frustrated. They've got to find a way to settle down. Like, no team has won on home ice so far, which is it's very weird to start off with. But that's where the tide can turn now. Tampa can go home. They're on the plane last night going, okay, best of three. We got two in our own building. You feel pretty good about it. I would caution, though, when your goaltender, and this was kind of like the Boston series for the Leafs. Freddie Anderson, I believe, was first star games 5 and 6. Outstanding. Vasilevsky, first star games 3 and 4. And he was brilliant last night. And in game 3, I thought he was really good when he needed to be. But it doesn't matter. So I think Tampa, the players are going, okay, we can't just rely on this guy to stand on his head. We've got to change the tide a little bit. And, you know, they scored on the power play. I thought it was a really nice executed play. Stamkos finishes it off. And here's a guy who scored 4 power play goals in a row in 4 games. Like, he's starting to heat up a little bit, but that's what he is. He's a power play specialist. Like, 5-on-5, I don't think that line has been as dangerous. And I think it's been good hockey, though. And I'm more interested, obviously, in tonight because it's such a swing game. It's the same scenario. Vegas has an opportunity to really put their foot on the neck or on the throat of the Winnipeg Jets tonight. I think the Jets will have a response. And for me, Connor Hellebuck has to be the guy.
He's got to be the guy. How much of a response do the Jets need to have, though? Because I think final 30 minutes of that game in Game 3, if they keep... Like, Fleury was a friggin' magician.
He was brilliant, but that's the Vasilevsky factor. That was the Vasilevsky factor last night. Winnipeg, the ice was tilted. They threw everything at him. He makes those 2 saves on Scheifele in the third.
I talked to some coaches in San Jose, Scotty, just asking about Vegas, like what to look for or whatever, and they said, Hellebuck has to find some kind of way to compete with Fleury because he is honestly out of his mind. Like, he's so good right now. In the series, San Jose, they told me he let in 1 bad goal, 6 games. 1.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult for a guy to say, I got to match that for our team to have a chance, but you just got to go out and you got to find a way to have your best game.
And it's not just not allowing bad goals, making the saves you need to make. He's flipping and flopping. He looked like Cujo at times last night. Cujo in his prime.
And when the Flower struggled those 2 playoff series in a row, like 2 seasons in a row in the playoffs for Pittsburgh, he would allow a bad goal and it would snowball. The team would sag. He would sag. There was a time, I think it was against the Islanders, where the puck hit the boards. It came back. He put it in his own net. Yep. Against Philly, it was a nightmare. I think it was game 2. Kyle Connor scores a bad goal from a bad angle. Short side through the body. Old Marc-Andre Fleury, or especially those years of Marc-Andre Fleury when he had those playoff performances, he would have wilted. That wasn't the case. He locked it down the rest of that game. Game 3 was brilliant. And like he's a guy who legitimately has given them a chance to win every night.
You think part of it is that, I mean, it's a pun, Vegas, whatever. They're playing with house money. Yeah. And they have been since October.
All season long.
He's the toast of the town.
Yeah.
He was brought there not just to play goal for the expansion team, but to be a face
for sure
in the city. But he's living life. He's having fun. He's wet-wheeling Blake Wheeler. He's just chill.
It's amazing for him. I think it's a great story. They are almost willed to be there. They had a massive tragedy at the start of the year. 58 people are murdered. And, you know, Derek Eglin makes that speech, which I thought was, you know, brilliant and very tough to do, you know, with the circumstances. And it was like this team was on a path that they were not going to be stopped. And I'll be the first to admit, I kept waiting for them to drop. Waiting for them to drop. Christmas, they're not going to make, you know, down the stretch, there's not a chance.
They win the division.
And then, no problem, like, L.A., I remember saying on this show, L.A.'s going to beat them. You know, they're a playoff-savvy team. They've been there, done that before. They go in and rinse L.A. Rinse them. And you're like, okay, and San Jose's really good team, kind of flew under the radar. Martin Jones had a great season. Nope, no problem. Let's go through them. Now, Winnipeg, if you ask me, you know, in a canon moment, like, who's a better team? Like, Winnipeg is a better team. Like, I'll still stand by that. But it doesn't matter what I say or what they're up 2-1.
Yeah, it's not about on paper right now.
Well, but that's what it always is. I mean, I go back to the local angle in this, and I was living in Ottawa at the time, so I was happier than a pig in crap wearing my son Dean jersey in the Byward Market to work every day as the Leafs were whitewashing the Senators each and every spring. And it, how many times were the Leafs on paper the better team out of those four series? I would argue the first time they were. And then beyond that, it was either pretty much negotiable or the Senators were clearly the better group if you laid the rosters out beside each other.
Right.
And it never mattered.
Didn't matter.
Cujo, Belfour.
Yeah.
Lalime.
The will of Gary Roberts. Or
Lalime, was that where he was allowing those goals from down the wall there?
Yeah. Well, and he
New
was.
New, yeah, the
two of them.
The wobbler down the wall, short side, right? I think
what they'll tell you, what they'll tell you up there in Ottawa, is that he was playing with a torn MCL at the time, so there might have been an issue going on with him, but he was still doing the old shortstop act, backhand in the hole type thing.
Reach across, it's only one goalie that does that successfully. In today's game is Pekka Rinne, because he has a very good glove hand. But yeah, I think back to that, and Lalime was a very good goalie, but there was that mental block there too.
Yeah,
I'm very excited for tonight's game. I think that Winnipeg can get back on track, but if I had to lay it all at the feet of one guy, and I'd hate to, because I'm not blaming him, but it's Hellebuck has to match Fleury as far as big save at the right time, like timely save. He did it against Nashville in a game where they were down, Winnipeg was down 3 Cobb, and then they stormed back and the game was 4-4.
That was game three, right?
Yeah. And Arvidsson had that breakaway early in the third period. And I said, here's the game right there. And Hellebuck made a great save. It reminded me of like Grant Fear in the 80s, where Edmonton, give up goals, but they could storm back. And you needed that big save at the right time. Hellebuck delivered that. He's got to do it in tonight's game. Like, this is a swing game, a pivotal game.
Yeah, huge. They got to... It's 2-1. It's either 3-1 or 2-2 going back to the peg. I don't deny that I think the Jets' future is pretty bright here. Do you guys believe that Vegas is going to be a going concern here for years to come? Is there any kind of expansion blip coming with these guys?
I don't see what the hell can go wrong. They got some great prospects coming. They got a ton of picks. They got a ton of cap space.
They re-upped Marchessault.
They do. My only thing is everyone, I just said it, like, that team's had the perfect season.
Yeah, and why not take advantage of that, Jamie? It's like, milk this, because it's so hard to win.
Right.
Forget about what's going to happen down. Who cares if we don't make the playoffs next year? Let's just milk this for what we got right now, because it's so hard to win. If we're good enough right now, we'll have to worry about James Neal and Perron and whatever in the future. But for right now, let's try to win.
Yeah. And
they can pull off the unthinkable.
Well, and why not, regardless of how this season ends, why not try to get better in the offseason? I mean, they were linked to Eric Karlsson at the deadline,
yeah,
right?
They linked to talks about Tavares. John Tavares.
You should be in on players like that, because you have constructed your team in a way where you can hit the ground running. They didn't inherit by their own accounts. They took some contracts off the books. They get Clarkson and guys like that, but they didn't inherit. The only one that actually you could argue is Tatar. And they went and traded and overspent for him. Now, here's a guy who's come back into the lineup and knows that he was a healthy scratch. But other than that, they're pretty cost-friendly contracts. Everyone is playing up or above what they are signed for. And you've got a bunch of space to do it. If the flower drops off next year as far as level of play, and all I can use is examples in a positive way and a negative way. Colorado went from one of their worst years ever to this is a team that's really good and turning the corner. Varlamov was a big part of it. Nate McKinnon, the emergence of guys like Rantanen.
Getting the Duchesne distraction out of there too, right? He didn't want to be there anymore.
But let's look at two Canadian teams. Ottawa makes it to the conference finals, and they were, for lack of better words, a tire fire all season. Karlsson doesn't get on track. Craig Anderson and Mike Condon weren't very good. There were so many things. They make the trade for Duchesne, and he struggles to settle in immediately. Everyone's like, oh, Kyle Turris, he's a better player. And that I still believe Duchesne's a better player than Kyle Turris. And, you know, by the end of the season, Duchesne was playing very well. Turris wasn't. Ottawa drops right off. Edmonton Oilers have a 105-point season or whatever. Everything went right. Talbot stood on his head. Probably could have been a Vezina finalist. Larson in that trade actually was solid. You know, Taylor Hall in New Jersey wasn't really good in that first year. He injured a little bit, struggled. So there were things that kind of looked all right that first year. Last year, this past season, tire fire. Terrible. And so the optics of the league, how much parity is involved, it's next year there's no guarantee. That's why even at this trade deadline, I remember saying to Brian and to Freddie Anderson's having a season. Like, go and get somebody at the deadline. And I'm not saying overspend and trade one of the core pieces away, but you had built up enough assets to try and help your team along. And because there's no guarantee that next year Mitch Marner is going to be, you know, trending in the right direction. You believe he is. Auston Matthews, health, Nazem Kadri, all of these guys. There's no guarantee. And next year is a whole different season. And now you're going to be losing JVR, Bozak, maybe Komarov. Like, I'm sure they're going to fill those pieces and be able to fill them in-house. But the dynamic of the team's going to be different. And there was no guarantee that they're just going to roll to 105-plus, maybe plus points next year. There could be a big step back. Could be. I'm not saying.
What do you mean by big, though? Like, I would take, if you're asking me, I would take 10 fewer points, 95 points. I don't care if you start at home or on the road in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Get me to the second or third round. I mean,
be
a better all-around team and take me deeper into the playoffs.
How you become a better all-around team is obviously growing, getting experience. But you have to, I mean, the elephant in the room all season long was that the defensive core wasn't good enough. And they were 28th in the National Hockey League in shots against. And that didn't get better in the playoffs. They had to rely on Freddie Anderson to stand on his head in games 5 and 6 to get him to 7. And Anderson was up and down. I didn't think he had the best playoffs. And obviously game 7, third period, it didn't work out. Jake Gardner, I think, had a great season. But it doesn't matter. What do we think of Jake Gardner's season? All we remember is -5 in that last game. So there are going to be some residual feelings left over about it. But they are a good team. But what my point was, and I'm long-winded about it, is there's no guarantee that they're just going to show up next year and they're a 105-point team again. And I'm using examples of the Ottawa Senators from the year before or the Edmonton Oilers. Now, they're differently constructed teams, so that gets thrown out immediately. But they also had their key players had terrible seasons. Carlson, Anderson, and I know McDavid was brilliant this year, but Draisaitl, it took him a while to get heated up. Nugent Hopkins got hurt. Their back end, Klefbom, Sakaris didn't show up till Christmas. He was injured. Like, Talbot had a terrible season in Edmonton. So if Freddie Anderson shows up and has a terrible season next year, where are the Leafs?
Well, the one thing I like about the Leafs is the fact that they have so much speed, right? I mean, I think the Oilers have a lot of guys who got some lead in their feet. And,
yep.
And
I think just because guys had bad seasons last year, you can't just say, oh,
they're done.
What happened? No, you just can't pick guys out of the league and say, oh, what happens if Sidney Crosby sucks next year? Like, it's just,
you expect everyone to play to their potential, for sure.
Yeah, like, it's...
But the thing is if they don't, that's when you start to have some problems because it's a top-heavy league.
I mean, it's going to be a fascinating offseason with Kyle Dubas first summer as general manager. And I mean, like the talking points, and I've done it all over my show. I'm sure you guys have talked about it. Tavares, are they in on this? Are they not in on this? Some of the bigger names, they've got to go and get a right shot, right side defenseman. How are they going to do that? I wonder just how creative he's going to be willing to get. You know, it's funny, like, I'll always sit there and say, and Nylander's name seems to always come up. Why don't they, Nylander for whoever? I don't see him trading William Nylander, but maybe he's willing to trade some people we're not thinking he'd be willing to trade because they're not as big of names
for sure
on the squad to try to improve a particular position. And sometimes it's addition by subtraction, and you put a different type of player in. Even if he's not a star, a stud in the league,
right?
You put a guy in a spot that had previously been occupied by somebody who maybe wasn't Dubas's type of player, and right. you marginally improve in that spot, which helps the team as a whole.
Well, it slots people better, and I just talked about it. A guy like Zaitsev has a good season next year. He played pretty well the season before. Last year, he got hurt. He was inconsistent.
He's having a decent world championships,
yeah,
too.
Not bad.
He's a good player. He's a good player. But, you know, you need those guys to play up to their potential. I don't, you know, Dubas continues to talk about, you know, he thinks that they've got some guys in-house that he's not as concerned about the defensive core as everyone else is. Well, great. Then let's hope your team isn't 28th in shots against next year. Because I know that's not the biggest stat to circle, but it is a stat that was staring at me in the eyes when you had a team that was top 10 in power play and penalty kill and was very good, but you're giving up a lot of shots. It's taxing on your goalie.
Blue Jays pitching coach Pete Walker at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Aaron Sanchez was some pissed after last night's game. The Jays got shelled by Oakland. They DL Jaime Garcia today with left shoulder inflammation, so he's out of the picture. So is Marcus Stroman. It's becoming a patchwork deal now for the Blue Jays. Walker will join us in just a little bit, and we'll bounce back to the Jets and Golden Knights. A Gerard Gallant quote that I want the boys to react to. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Noodles and the O-Dog here. This is Overdrive on your long weekend Friday, TSN 1050. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. I wonder which one Huntsy chose, the app or skipthedishes.com.
I'm excited either way.
And I wonder what Huntsy ordered for us. I'm going to find out here in just a few minutes. Gerard Gallant said what about player accountability? And Blue Jays pitching coach Pete Walker at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Noodles and the O-Dog are here. Overdrive, TSN 1050. So I was listening to this clip earlier on as I was prepping for the show. This is Gerard Gallant, and he was asked about player accountability on his team. And I honestly have no idea how either of the two of you are going to react to this. I think it's inarguable that Gallant is one of the best coaches in the NHL. There should be no doubt that Florida regrets firing him unless their binder worms have a little stick-to-itiveness that they shouldn't. This guy's had an unbelievable season. But I don't think I've ever heard a head coach at this level talk about player accountability and players being accountable to their head coach the way Gerard Gallant said this.
Well, they take responsibility, but again, it's a game of mistakes. You're not going to be perfect every time you're on the ice. So when them mistakes happen, you forget about them and you move on. So everybody's going to make mistakes. You can go over that game, and there's not one player on the ice that didn't make mistakes last night. So like I said, they'll own up to the mistakes, but they don't have to. That's part of our game. You make mistakes, you move on, you play the next shift, and you hope you make some good plays. So but those guys are accountable guys, and they work hard. And I said, they don't got to apologize to me. They just got to go out there, play their game, and get better every shift you can do.
That's honestly a big part of your success, though. Like, is the accountability a big part of your success?
I guess it is to a point, but again, I'm not holding my players accountable to making mistakes. You go out there, and if you worry about making mistakes, you're not going to play a good game. I want you going out there thinking you're going to make the good plays and you know, do the right things on the ice. So don't worry about your mistakes.
I just thought that was a pretty progressive, kind of refreshing take. I mean, you know, and look, we always come back to the local angle on this thing, and Babcock is an example of a guy, William Nylander's kind of playing on the edges, not doing a whole lot, and all of a sudden he finds himself on the fourth line, or Mitch Marner, or whatever it was over the course of the season. And I'm not saying you don't do that sometimes when it's appropriate, but I've never heard a head coach kind of hand it back to the players and say, hey, look, I'm not expecting you to play perfectly. Just go out there, bust your ass, and make a good play the next shift.
It's an adjustment to the millennials, too.
Well, I was going to, yeah.
It's the way these kids are now. Like, when Jamie and myself were playing, if we went up to a coach and he wrote down a drill and we said, why are we doing this? The coach would say, shut the bleep up and do the drill. That's what these kids say now. They're like, why? What? They're information driven. They want to see things. They got iPads on benches.
Yeah.
They're very different. They want information. They say why. Why are we doing this? And I think it's a great adjustment to some degree. You can tell he's a no-nonsense guy. He looks like he wants to rip somebody's face off on the bench during a game. But that's his style. It's like that's how he was a player. He was a skilled player. He understands, you know, if 7 out of 10 times I make a good play, then just leave me alone. I'll get the job done.
Yeah. Right. And I also think saying stuff like that publicly, Noodles, mm-hmm. if you got to go in there and kick a guy's ass behind closed doors because he's been playing like crap or because he's doing something stupid off the ice that's affecting his ability to play well on the ice, I think you've got a lot longer of a cord to go with that guy. He's more likely to listen to you.
You build up some goodwill with the players. Now, all you hear out of Vegas is that Gerard and Florida was that he was a player's coach. And there's a difference between being a player's coach where you're a kiss ass to the players and you allow, for lack of better words, the inmates to run the asylum. I think that's a saying. You know, you want the coach to be fair but hard. And that's what you hear Gerard Gallant is a guy who, he's honest, but I like that approach. Hey, you made a mistake. Like, what he can do to a player on the bench, if a guy makes a mistake, you say, hey, you know what, don't worry about it, but next time try this. So you keep it open and you keep that dialogue open. And I think that's where maybe some progressiveness as far as coaching has come a long way. And the coaches, I'm good friends with Travis Green in Vancouver. Now, Travis is an old school guy, but he's had to adapt to the new school of thinking. And all you hear is that he's honest with his players. And I think I've always respected, like Daryl Sutter was honest, but it was with a heavy layer of sarcasm, which, you know, sometimes grows a little thinner on you. But like he would tell you exactly where you stood with him and with the team. And I always respected coaches that let you know. Like, you know, and I think that's what the good coaches have the ability. And I never had Mike Babcock as a coach. So, yeah, he's a hard guy. He's a grading guy. But he's also a very good coach. He knows what he's doing. But he's got to find a way, especially if he wants to be with this core for an extended length of time. Like, if he's going to be an 8-year coach here, that's what his deal is. If he's going to be here for 8 years, he is going to have blow-ups with Austin Matthews. He's going to have blow-ups with Mitch Marner. Because Mitch Marner, probably right now, but I think 2 years from now or 3 years from now, when he's really pushed through and we know exactly what he is as a player, there's going to be times where he's going to turn around on the bench and say something to the coach when the coach is meeting. Yeah, you know what. And that happens, but the relationship, there's got to be respect there. And it sounds to me like Gerard Gallant respects his players and lets them have a long leash. And there'll be times I'm sure he's pissed off, but ultimately you see this team has responded to his style of coaching. I mean, they're fast, they're loose, they play with some structure, but it's not driven by X's and O's. They play the same way. And I think that's a tribute to George McPhee and his staff too. They chose wisely. They chose some players that could conform to that style. That's one thing. When Minnesota, I remember Doug Risebrow and the scouts telling me they tried to draft the same type of player. Guys who were, you know, secondary on teams but character and worked hard. They did. There wasn't big egos. And it doesn't seem to be like that in Vegas as well. Or it does seem to be like that, where it's not ego-driven. It's just hard-working guys who are bought into something. And Gerard Gallant is the perfect person to steer that ship.
And success never hurts. Aaron Sanchez, pretty upset after last night's Blue Jays loss to Oakland. He got rocked, didn't look good, didn't get out of the fifth inning. The Jays are back to .500. They've DL'd another pitcher. Jaime Garcia has left shoulder inflammation.
Jaime Garcia.
There you go. We'll get to all of it. I'll play you the Aaron Sanchez clip from last night and Blue Jays pitching coach Pete Walker coming up at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Overdrive, TSN 1050. And this is Aaron Sanchez on I don't know, pretty much the state of the Jays right now?
I miss a year. You know, it's a long time. I hate to use excuses, but I'm still trying to get my feet underneath me. You know, like I said, in spring training, you can do it as much as you want, and until you get here, and, you know, the adrenaline's where it's at, and, you know, you got fans in the stadium, but it's just one of those things. You know, I'll find it. I'm not worried.
Are you encouraged with the swing and miss you're able to get?
I don't really give a shit. I want to win. I don't care.
Blue Jays down to 500. Jaime Garcia onto the DL today. That's another starting pitcher. He wasn't pitching that well, but another guy down.
Those are kind of hero comments. It's like he's trying to prove that he's intense and wants to win, then also saying, hey, man, like, give me a break. I've missed a year. Just go do it.
Yeah, at this point, and especially with the way that starting rotation, that was supposed to be the strength of the team.
Yeah, it's the I want to win. I'll do anything. I don't give a crap about this. By the way, I've missed a year, so don't blame it on me. Like, you got to give me some time.
They've got 22 wins, or 22 and 22. The bullpen has accounted for 11 of those wins. Like, that's how often they're winning games late. That just isn't sustainable. And if the starting rotation doesn't turn things around...
Wasn't that the one thing we were kind of looking forward to going into the season? It's like, this rotation, there's that many more wins if everyone's healthy. Hasn't materialized.
We got questions for the pitching coach, Pete Walker. He's going to join us on the other side of the top of the 5 o'clock hour, including Marcus Stroman. What's up with him? Is this just a little bit of rest? Is there something more serious going on? We'll get into Sanchez, the Garcia DLing, and so much more. Pete Walker with us. Scott MacArthur for Brian Hayes. Noodles and the O-Dog. It's Overdrive. TSN 1050.
You've been listening to Overdrive, delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com.